Thanks, Anusha. Hello, everyone. Okay, so I'm just going to share my screen here to get started. Okay. So I just thought we'd start with this quote. I was just chatting with David and Anusha at the beginning of today, just about the relationship between mindfulness and self-compassion. And Tara Brach talks a lot about this. And I heard you guys were hearing about Tara Brach last week. So this is quite fitting. And so she says the two parts of genuine acceptance, seeing clearly, which is a component of mindfulness, and holding our experience with compassion, are as interdependent as the two wings of a great bird. So together they enable us to fly and to be free. And so if we think about mindfulness and self-compassion, they actually go together. So the bird can't fly with just one wing. We actually need both. So self-compassion is inherently part of mindfulness, and mindfulness is inherently part of self-compassion. And I was just sharing earlier how oftentimes in our culture, mindfulness loses the self-compassion piece. And I can speak to this personally. You know, when I first came across mindfulness about 17 years ago, my inner critic was still quite loud. And so when I would do the mindfulness practices, they didn't feel like the genuine relief of holding myself in true acceptance, right? So I wasn't quite flying with that freedom that we can truly attain. So what I want to go over with you today is a brief experiential practice and definition of mindfulness, and then a few practices with self-compassion to give you a felt sense of these. And I'm sure, as most of you know, even with the contemplative practices that you do in the fellowship, that these are mindfulness practices, right? When we drop inside and we slow down, and it gives us that perspective that you were discussing earlier to start to see things with more clarity. So let's start with just our definition of mindfulness. And I really like the definition that Jon Kabat-Zinn offers, and he's the founder of mindfulness based stress reduction, and a huge proponent of mindfulness and bringing mindfulness to the West, specifically mindfulness meditation. Now, of course, we use mindfulness in meditation, but it's not exclusive to meditation and contemplative practices. So we can be mindful of lots of different things, and we'll explore this together in our practice after. So basically, mindfulness is simply paying attention. Right? Where am I pointing my laser beam of attention on purpose with a little bit of effort? What's going on right now? And that effort isn't like a hard striving effort. It's like a gentle curiosity. What was that thought that just went through my head before I started feeling low? Or, you know, what is that feeling that's here, right? So we're paying attention on purpose, a little conscious effort to what's arising in this moment, not what's happening in the future, what may happen in the future, or what has happened in the past. And then this last piece with kindness. And here we're starting to see how compassion is nested into our definition of mindfulness. And often in our culture, I find that the fourth part there gets dropped off, gets missed. So that's why I really love teaching about self-compassion, because when we bring self-compassion into mindfulness, it's very powerful. So we're going to do a little mindfulness practice, very brief here. I'm going to count out loud 1, 2, 3, 4. And then I'm going to count down, and we're going to clap our hands 4, 3, 2, 1. And then we're just going to hold them apart, and I'm going to guide you through an exercise. So I'd like you to clap hard enough to generate some sensations on your hand, but not to hurt yourself. So remember, we're doing this with kindness. So here we go. Ready? 4, 3, 2, 1. 1, 2, 3, 4. And then hold your hands apart, and you can keep your eyes open or closed. And I would just like you to bring your attention to the sensations along the hands and the fingers. So just noticing And then bring your attention to the sensations just along the right palm and fingers and thumb. And then I'd like you to bring your attention just to the sensations along the right index finger. So that first finger, just along there, maybe you notice. And then I'd like you to bring your attention to the tip of the finger. So what's happening at the tip of your finger? Okay, and so you can relax your hands down. So what did we notice? And you're welcome to use the chat here to just pop in sort of what you noticed as I directed your attention towards different parts of your experience. Where did your attention go? What happened? You're also welcome to unmute or raise a hand. Did anybody notice? Put up your hand if you notice sensations along your hand. Some tingling, yeah, buzzing, yeah. Put up your hand if it was easy to keep your attention focused on each part that I was guiding you through. Was that easy or difficult? Easy first, relatively easy. And then if it was a challenge to keep your attention focused on what I was, maybe we're shy to admit this. Put up your hand if there were things competing inside your body, maybe like an ache in your back or like, oh, I have a stiff neck. Yeah. Put up your hand if there were things in your environment that were competing for your attention. So maybe a sound in the room or something outside, or maybe you're cold. Yeah. Okay, good. Beautiful. So this is mindfulness, right? So this is mindfulness. We're paying attention to our experience as it's unfolding in the moment. There is no right or wrong. And so many times we can feel like mindfulness or meditation failures because we can't hold our attention, right? But actually watching how we struggle with holding our attention, the very human tendency to have wandering mind or to have the mind looking for something else or scanning other parts of our experience is actually mindfulness, right? So this is it. It's not anything more than that. It's very, very simple, right? And then put up your hand if you were gentle with yourself when your mind wandered. Was it easy? You know, if your mind wandered, were you kind of like, okay, that's okay. Minds wander. Okay. And put up your hand, and you don't have to, but you know, if you felt like, oh darn, I'm not doing it right. Or I'm not getting the self-compassion stuff right. Maybe. Yeah. A little bit. Yep. Some of us definitely. So this is what I was talking about when I was younger, I would be like, oh, I'm not doing it right. So that's, so again, oh, okay. There's a little bit of self-criticism or judgment here, right? So even noticing that, that's not a bad thing, but we start to notice what's arising. We notice our relationship with ourselves. So I want to share my screen again. So this is going to lead us into our discussion of why self-kindness and compassion is an important part of mindfulness, right? So mindfulness is paying attention to what's arising. And then the self-compassion is, how do we hold ourselves when those difficult experiences arise? So let's see here. And so the definition that I use or I follow is set out by Dr. Kristen Neff, and she is like the pioneer in self-compassion literature. So in the past 30 years, self-compassion wasn't actually in the research science base at all. Prior to that, they used to focus on self-esteem, which self-esteem is great when you're doing well, you know, when you achieve your goals and you're getting where you want to go. But when we don't achieve our goals, or when we feel like we failed or we've had a setback, self-esteem abandons us. It doesn't tell us that we're still okay. Whereas self-compassion says, hey, you're a human being and that's normal to fail. And hey, it's really hard to fail. And oh yeah, what do you need? So it brings that tenderness to us when we're in those difficult moments. So self-compassion is a more stable, steady friend, as opposed to a fair weather friend who's only giving us the gold stars when we achieve our goals. And so Kristen Neff talks about three components of self-compassion. And here again, we're seeing, I've underlined here, mindfulness, right? So mindfulness is the first piece of self-compassion. We have to first see things as they are, rather than, and she contrasts this with over-identification and under-identification. And so over-identification is this thing of, you know, for example, maybe I get a test back in school and I get a poor mark, you know, and, you know, okay, I get a poor mark. I'm probably feeling sad, disappointed, upset, but maybe over-identification would be, I'm a loser. I'm not getting anywhere with my life. I'll never be a psychologist. No one will love me. I'll be, you know, down and out, and none of my dreams will ever come true. So that would be sort of a over-identification example, right? Dramatizing things. Under-identification is the opposite of that, where we pretend like it doesn't matter, right? And they're both coping skills in different ways. They're totally valid. But under-identification is sort of compartmentalizing, pushing our pain away. So mindfulness is just saying, yeah, ouch, this really hurts. This is hard, you know? And then common humanity is this piece of, and I'm sure you guys touch on these themes quite a bit in your fellowship, you know, of common humanity is saying, you know, suffering and difficulty, failure, setbacks, loss, those are all very normal parts of the human journey. Right? There's nothing that I did wrong. There's actually nothing wrong with me. I can still learn from my mistakes, but mistakes are a normal part of this path. Other people make mistakes too. I'm not alone in this. And she contrasts this with isolation. And so when we think about isolation, we think about this concept of nobody understands me. My pain is worse. Nobody could possibly feel the bad feelings that I feel. I'm a terrible, no good human. Right? And so we start to see these walls that we put up between ourselves and other human beings, right? And so isolation is actually one of the most harmful experiences for being human, because we're social beings. And so we're hardwired, our neurobiology is wired into our communities and our tribes, and being together with other humans has actually, we've evolved to survive like that. So when we feel like we're separate or isolated from the human community or my tribe or belonging, it's one of the most detrimental experiences for being human. And we're really seeing this with the pandemic right now. You know, we're starting to see that nobody is immune to the detrimental effects of isolation, right? We really do need each other. This isn't a I can do it on my own, even though we live in a culture that really values and kind of tricks us into thinking we should be doing it on our own. And so we have mindfulness, this hurts, this is hard, common humanity, that's sort of saying, yeah, that's a normal part of being human, that we're going to have some tough spots. And then because life is really hard sometimes, you know, can we be kind to ourselves, you know, versus that self-criticism that can kind of, you know, kick ourselves when we're down, or can be hard on ourselves when things are tough. So here we go. So we're going to do a little reflection exercise, and you're welcome to jot this down on a piece of paper as well. But the first part of the practice is, I would like you to reflect for a moment that a good friend of yours. So I want you to think about somebody who you really care about. You really care about them deeply and unconditionally, and they come to you and, you know, they've had a misfortune, a setback, or a failure. And, you know, they're being really hard on themselves. They're saying, oh, you know, I really blew it. There's something wrong with me. Maybe things won't work out. Why does this always happen? And I want you to imagine the words, the presence, the emotions that bubble up inside of you for this good friend. And you're welcome to sort of sit here and savor these feelings, this response that you would offer to your good friend during their moment of difficulty. Maybe it's a member of the fellowship. You're welcome to also jot these down. Maybe there would be some urges or gestures, maybe a hand on the back, So what sort of pours out of you in response to your friend's suffering or distress? And then what I'd like you to do is, we're going to do another reflection. And I'd like you to imagine that it was you that had the setback or failure or loss. So it's your moment of difficulty. Maybe you got, a bad job review, or you didn't get the job promotion you wanted, or something didn't work out. And I'd just like you to notice how you respond to yourself. So what happens inside? What's the internal conversation like? What's the emotional tone? What's the tone of voice? Are there any gestures or images or physical postures that pop up for you? And then I'd just like you to compare the two. Oops. So what do you notice? What do you notice about the difference between the two responses? And again, we can chat these in the side, or I can do show of hands again too if that feels a little better. But what do we notice between how we respond to a friend versus how we respond to ourselves when things are difficult? Go ahead, Heather. Yeah.
Well, when you're trying to help a friend, it's easier to reach out. But when you're helping yourself, I find it feels self-indulgent. And self-indulgence is something that I struggle against.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
thank you.
With another person, it feels more like an act of generosity, but with yourself, not so much.
Yes. Okay. Beautiful. Thank you, Heather. Yes. And Rosemary, you have your hand raised as well.
Yeah. For me, I think it was, there was warmth and there was ease. I wanted to touch the arm of the friend. In contrast, when I thought of myself, I tensed up. I, wanted to sort of tug on my hair. It was it was almost, I wanted to hurt myself. Not in a, a physical metaphor, but it also is true that in so doing, I recognize that, by tensing up and not allowing any gentleness, I am hurting myself.
Right. Okay. Thank you, Rosemary. And Ruth.
I noticed my tendency to isolate in response to needing, especially if I feel like I need too much empathy, for instance. So I'll go away and get my shit together before I ask for any. And when I'm dealing with people who are difficult in my community, who may be narcissistic or unlikable or just really needy and difficult, I have the capacity to love them and tend to them. When I think about them, I imagine them as babies. So that's interesting to use that trick. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. So, and then, I think it's Hanusha says very gentle and want to hold friend versus very harsh with self. And then Rob is sharing, I don't try and fix it for a friend. I'm just there. For myself, I try to change, do better and recover. So we're sort of noticing this trend where there's this outpouring of generosity, of care, of unconditional kindness for our friends. And then for ourselves, there's these little bit of walls, some sense of isolation, some sense of personal failure. I should have done better. I shouldn't struggle, right? A belief that maybe we shouldn't, or that we've done something wrong. And I'm just going to see, I see Frank's hand is up. So go ahead, Frank. Did you want to share? Yeah.
I guess some of the things I feel for my friend would be maybe pity, compassion, empathy, and I'd probably use supportive words. Mm-hmm. But for myself, depending on if there are options, I'd start considering what options there are to get out of whatever I'm in. But I might have to grieve. Again, it all depends on what it is. Sometimes reach out for a friend or for some kind of support from somebody else. And so, but I find for me, first, I would try to figure out how to fix it.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So we see that fixing mind is very active when it's ourselves and less active when it's other people. So here, this is our informal definition of self-compassion. So if anyone says, what was that self-compassion talk, or what is that self-compassion stuff anyways, you can say to them, oh, it's super simple. It's just offering ourselves the same kindness and generosity that we would offer a good friend when things are hard. Right. And so that's a really, I love this practice, because it's just a really practical tool that we can all relate to. So sort of say, oh yeah, interesting, that contrast. And so put up your hand if you notice the trend of being kinder to another than to yourselves when in pain. Okay. So I want everyone to look around. Yeah. So some people are mixed. Yep. Okay. The majority of us have our hands up, right? So that's really interesting too. So there's this phenomenon where I'm harder on myself than on other people, but it's also kind of pretty common. And this aligns with Kristen Neff's research, where she found 79% of people tend to be harder on themselves than others when things are difficult, right? She found that 4% were able to be kinder to themselves than to other people in difficult situations, and 16% were about equal. 16% were able to give themselves about as much compassion as other people. So it starts to give us some evidence for this theory that, maybe there's nothing wrong with me that I'm hard on myself. You know, again, common humanity. Maybe this is just part of the wiring of being human, where, you know, compassion is a conscious step rather than self-compassion is a conscious step rather than an automatic one. Right. But the way we can get there is through what would I say to a friend in this situation? Right? So it's a nice little shortcut that we can bring into our minds in those moments when we're noticing, again, mindfulness. I have to notice that I'm being hard on myself before I can start to shift the way that I relate to or talk to myself or treat myself. And let's think about for a moment, if I'm in a moment of difficulty in my life, you know, and I'm kicking myself and I'm mad at myself, how much is that really helping me to move through the pain? Right? I get it. The inner critic is helpful in the short term, but in the long term, you know, really the thing that we probably long for is the same thing we're offering to somebody else, which is this supportive, accepting, gentle, kind environment that's going to help us to move through the pain. And her research, Dr. Neff's research, also talks about how people who've had difficult experiences like divorce, chronic illness or pain, and post-traumatic stress disorder, that self-compassion actually helps them to move through those difficult life experiences better than people who are more self-critical. So we start to see that this compassionate relationship with ourselves becomes an ally or a strength or a support. And I think that, you know, Heather's comment earlier about the fears of it being self-indulgent, it's such a common fear that we talk about often I don't want to take too much because others might think that I'm being selfish. Right? When actually, when I fill my cup up and give myself what I need, I'm my best version of myself to then give to other people from that full place rather than from a depleted, resentful place. Right? So with self-compassion, we're starting to meet our own needs. Right? And that doesn't mean that we have to do it all alone, but as we start to turn towards, well, what are my needs? Oh, I can give myself my own needs. That's okay. You know, it's almost like a process of permission giving. It starts to radically transform how we relate to ourselves and how we deal with difficult feelings. So Hanusha, how are we doing for time? I just want to make sure that I'm not going over.
Probably start to wind up soonish. Yeah, within the sort of wind up in the next 2 or 3 minutes.
Yeah. So I'd just like to maybe then open the floor to for a little bit of discussion around what are your impressions of this exercise and just the brief two practices that we did, one for mindfulness, one for self-compassion. What's sort of going on inside your hearts and minds in this moment? And please feel free, insights, challenges. Welcome to chat it in on the side or unmute. Okay. So what we can do then is I'll just offer these three steps. Here we go. I'll just share my screen again. Go. So these three steps, and these three steps are outlined. I can actually share with Hanusha a link of where you can do this as a guided meditation practice, and also where you can access these steps as well. So if the next time you're struggling with something difficult, I'd like you to experiment with these three steps. So the first step we talked about is just acknowledging this is a difficult moment, right? So not denying ourselves the experience of having something difficult happen or pain. So this is a moment of suffering, you know, and then the second step is common humanity. So connecting to the human race rather than feeling separate from other humans. So suffering and difficulty are a normal part of the human journey. Other people experience difficulty and suffering as well. And I'm not alone in this pain, right? And then finally, and we use this phrasing, and you've probably heard this before from like Buddhist metta phrasing, the may I. We use the language may I, but you don't have to. You can find language that works for you. But may I just sort of invokes this invitation. You know, I may not always be able to be kind to myself, but it's like an invitation, or I'm setting my intention towards may I be kind to myself, or may I be gentle with myself or this pain or this difficult emotion. May I give myself what I need. And sometimes when I offer these skills in groups, you know, people will find one of these steps is most helpful for them. So I'd encourage you to, if one of them has resonated for you today, really just practice with that one skill for yourself, and allow that to be your self-compassion practice. And I'm just seeing here, Margaret saying, I'm intrigued by the continuum from self-compassion to self-indulgence. Absolutely. And Diane Potts is saying, I always thought love thy neighbor as thyself, but perhaps I should give myself the courage to accept mistakes I make and move forward and not give up. Absolutely. I love that saying to love thy neighbor as thyself, because I think, you know, oftentimes it's we have to love ourselves as we love our neighbors as well. You know? And go ahead, Frank.
I'm wondering in some cases if accepting things, if it's an acceptance, then it might not hurt, depending on what it is. And another thing is, I think if someone denies it, even though they deny it, they're still feeling it, I would suggest anyway.
Absolutely. It's still there. And our feelings just wait for us, right? It's actually a relationship to our feelings that we have. Feelings don't need to go anywhere. As long as I'm human, I'm going to experience the emotions that I don't like feeling, like fear, anger, sadness, rage, from now until the day I die. So, you know, it's like our efforts to get rid of those parts of ourselves, you know, actually is just fighting what is, you know. So when we can turn towards and start to understand our humanity and our needs and our human needs to be connected and to feel seen or to feel heard or to feel loved and accepted by others, then we can start to offer that to ourselves as well. And just looking in the chat here, go ahead, Frank, sorry. Okay, yeah. And then I've got Brenda saying, when I'm beating myself up or making a mistake, I want to withdraw. This gives me the courage to accept mistakes I make and move forward and not give up. Oh, I think I read that one. Rhea says, I like to say, may I live with ease. Nice. And Margaret's just saying she likes that too. Mine is trying to live with grace. Yeah, and this is grace. Grace is part of acceptance. It's like, oh, it's really hard being human sometimes, you know? And it's just sort of throwing your hands up and saying, wow, like it's humbling, right? When we experience these, and then remembering, you know, other people experience these emotions too. I'm not alone. And I think that that's why, you know, meeting in groups like this are so, it's so helpful for us, you know, because we can connect on that human level. And when we can connect to our other humans, I really do believe that is kind of the spiritual level, you know, we're not alone in we are alone in our human journey, and we're all collectively doing this together. Yeah, we are all that it is to be human. Thanks, Ruth. Yeah, so, okay, so I think, are there any other comments or questions?
Looks like not at this moment. Thank you, everyone, for taking part in this. Any final comments to wrap up from you, Monique, before we move along?
No, I'm just really grateful to have the opportunity to talk about self-compassion. It is my passion. I really believe that it's what's needed on the planet right now. So I'm really grateful for your presence and attention for this talk. And if anybody is interested in learning more about self-compassion, on my website, I have resources, I have guided meditations and practices. And I also offer trainings and groups in self-compassion and mindfulness. So you're welcome to check those out. So again, thank you so much.
Thank you, Monique. Perhaps I'll ask you to write the URL for your website into the chat, and I can also send it along to people after the service if anyone's interested. I'd